Good evening, everyone, and welcome
to another issue
of The Summoner. I am your host and writer, Walter Pierce. My website is galleryofthemind.com. Please check it out if you have the time. Also, if you want to contact me, my email address is webmaster@galleryofthemind.com. Again, that's webmaster@galleryofthemind.com. All right, on with the show.
This is the story of a group called the Warriors. They are blessed by the ancestors. The ancestors' light shines through them as a power of light. The light, the shine, can be varied a bit, which slightly changes the power. The Warriors use their power to protect their people on the planet Artonia in the Yellow Realm. Their tales are spellbinding adventures just beyond the reach of even imagination. Among these warriors is one even more unique. He is unique because he is half human. He is called the Summoner, and these are his tales.
Issue 52, Why Bombs Go Boom. This planet is Artonia in the Yellow Realm. An older man named Kelvar sits alone outside the Sadastra Medical Institute. He is crying. A loneliness surrounds him. He has lost his wife. The woman in room 1170 has died. No one even remembered her name. All evidence of her existing seems to be gone. He is the only one that remembers her. He and her had left the city and lived alone on their own. They were happy. Now she is dead. He has nothing in the city, and life outside the city would mean that he is alone. What can he do now? He stops crying and looks up with a glum look on his face. He knows what he will do. He will talk to the ones who brought him back to this city. He will go to the Warriors. Maybe he will just talk, or maybe he will do more. Elsewhere, two of the leaders of the Warriors, Arrow and Glass, are on their way to speak to a group of scientists. The scientists that have been studying the robot, Crone 8, have just made a discovery after going over their findings. Arrow and Glass hear two very angry scientists yelling at each other as they enter the room. That is impossible! I need to go over your calculations now! The scientist, Gerard, scowls at the other scientist, Carlos, as he makes the demand. Carlos grabs a little iPad-type device and angrily presents it. If you don't understand the work, be sure to let me know. I'm sure I won't understand it because it just won't be correct. That is just too much. Carlos reaches for Gerard's neck. Gerard responds in kind. The movements are slow and the blows thrown are weak. None of the other scientists in the room do anything but watch. Glass and Arrow do the same.
I thought we were supposed to be the Warriors.
Arrow does not look away from the awkward fight as he answers. We are the only Warriors here. Arrow clears his throat to get the attention of the combatants. The two combatants stop and look at the Warriors. Carlos and Gerard do not stop clasping each other. Which of you two is in charge?
Neither of us! Jonas is.
They both look over to a very small scientist named Jonas. Then they continue to fight.
Oh, don't mind them. I am in control.
I see.
They are just letting off some steam. Carlos called you, and Gerard thinks that we shouldn't have.
Arrow and Glass look puzzled.
Gerard thinks it was too early. We should have went over the calculations more. Okay. Why have we been called? We have a story to tell you.
A story?
We decoded some of the information on the robot you brought us. The, Crone 8. He had information on biogenetic temporal bombs. In fact, he was a biogenetic temporal bomb.
What?
Before any more can be said, Kelvar storms into the room. What are you doing here? You killed my wife!
Errol, I think we're going to have to fight. We have to take him out quickly.
With his power to take us into his mind, I think we're going to have to take him out quickly, and we may need to kill him. Did you hear what I just said? I said you killed my wife.
Kelvar, we haven't killed anyone. And as far as I know, you're not married. And never were.
Liar! Liar! Reality changes for Glass and Arrow. They are suddenly inside Kelvar's mind. It is like a desert. There are no buildings, no houses, no animals. Just sand dunes as far as the eye can see. This is my wife! A giant hologram of Eleni appears in the sky. The sound of Kelvar crying can be heard in the background. Then there's a lash of rage that tears through everything. Waves of pure energy start streaking through the skies. Cries of anger and anguish accompany the violent flashes. Arrow and Glass run for their lives. They know that if Kelvar kills them inside his mind, that their bodies outside his mind will also die. The trauma to the brain will be too great.
Run!
Where to? He's everywhere! The warriors, Arrow and Glass, know that they cannot really use their power. They are in Kelvar's mind. But Glass does so anyway. She creates a giant, nearly invisible pane of explosive floating glass in the sky. That is her power. There is approximately 0% chance that the glass will not be hit by the bolts of energy. Glass figures that Kelvar is so busy throwing his tantrum that he will not see the glass until it's too late. She is right. Kelvar's little realities take on a life of their own in his mind. He is like God there. He can do anything. But the ones brought into his mind can do anything that they could do in the outside world. So if Kelvar doesn't prevent or counter a warrior's power, then the unexpected can happen. Multiple waves of energy hit the glass far up in the sky. A white light flashes, and then no one sees anything. In reality, all three bodies lay on the floor, unmoving. All of them have their eyes open and completely white. They are just staring off into space. The scientists stop what they are doing and run over to the bodies. They call for the medical teams. They try to revive the bodies. Nothing works. Then, with no warning, Kelvar screams, "Eleni!" The instruments in their lab begin to go haywire. The scientists look around, helpless and bewildered. The medical teams arrive and are dumbfounded by the scene. A member of the medical team finally gathers his senses and is able to sound a general alert for the policing forces. Then everyone seemingly freezes, and the whole reality seems to change. Everyone finds themselves on a precipice overlooking an open field. There are murmurs and questions of bewilderment. Then someone shouts, "Look over there! There is an army!" The scientists immediately recognize that these are the Dark Ones found in the memory of the robot that they were studying. The army is fierce and large. Some of the Dark Ones are walking on the ground, while others are on horses in the sky. Then someone shouts out again, "Look over there! There's another army!" Approaching them is an even larger army. It is about 4 times the size of the Dark One's forces. It is a mix of people from many realms. Among the army, there are shines of Artonia's warriors. There's a sense of imminent danger as the armies get closer to one another. The two armies catch sight of each other. They charge headlong to each other with their weapons firing like mad. Sounds of fury, wails of agony, and cries of heartfelt emotion fill the air, along with the dust rising from the battle. An errant weapon hits the precipice on which the scientists are standing. It destroys it. The falling men cry out, but none hear them. Only Jonas manages to grab a hold of an outcropping of rocks, but he is not very strong. He cannot pull himself up, though he valiantly tries. Finally, his strength gives way, and he falls to the ground below. He crashes atop a mass of dead bodies. He is the only one alive, and he has broken his back. He is able to look over to the battle, which has finally ended. He sees that the Dark Ones have been defeated, but the victorious soldiers do not let their guard down. One soldier takes out an object that appears to be a sword as the other soldiers begin to back up. Then Jonas sees what they were waiting on. Dark mists begin to rise from the fallen Dark Ones. It is so eerie. They seem to make the day unnaturally dark, with only their red eyes glowing. The soldier with the sword emits a light that immediately somehow kills these creatures in groups. As more come out, he kills them with the light. It looks like this is almost over. Then someone shoots the soldier holding the sword. It is another soldier, but this soldier has red eyes. He turns to face the soldiers beside him. They shoot him down, but now the other Dark Ones are advancing. The soldiers are firing, but it is no good. The weapons have no effect on the Dark Ones. The soldiers start to retreat as the ghostly Dark Ones pick up speed and begin possessing the remaining soldiers. The possessed soldiers then start using their weapons to take down the fleeing soldiers. The terror and death enliven the Dark Ones. They howl wickedly as the soldiers flee. The summoner, Step, the policing forces, and another medical team arrive at the scientist's lab. The scene is horrific. There are dead bodies all over the floor. The summoner hears the medical team say that everyone is dead except the ones with the white eyes. He is speechless as he sees that Arrow and Glass are two of those with white eyes. Then he hears a wail of pain. One of the scientists has survived. The summoner can see that they are checking his back and asking what happened. So the summoner walks over. I think that Kelvar took us into his mind. I saw a great battle. We were all there. I think it was a battle that already happened in the alternate reality. I don't think I'm going to make it. But I have to pass on what we discovered. We found out why the dark rift opened in the alternate reality. Oh. Their bombs are more powerful than ours.
More powerful than a biogenetic temporal bomb?
These are biogenetic temporal bombs. But they are more, shall we say, enhanced than the ones we've produced. The yield is around 38% more powerful. And that is why the dark rift opened in their reality and not ours. Jonas goes unconscious, and the medical team removes him. Next time, let's meet up in the Green Realm.